Hello and welcome to Tantramar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Sackville, New Brunswick, the heart of the Maritimes on the traditional and unceded lands of the Mi'kmaq people. I'm Erica Butler. It's Friday, November 5th. Coming up on today's show, three local voices to share what's going on in Sackville. We check back in with QP shop steward Pat Lekas to find out how workers on strike are feeling as they await news from a nine-hour meeting on Thursday between QP President Stephen Drost and Premier Blaine Higgs. The Sackville Farmers Market makes a move to its winter location this weekend, and we talk with market manager Michael Freeman about that, as well as how he feels about recent news from town staff about the future of a new permanent location for the market. And we also talk with Sackville Recreation Director Matt Pride. The town of Sackville is taking over Moonlight Madness on November 19th and December 3rd and expanding the event this year with more vendors, wagon rides, and even a fireworks display. Pride is also asking council to approve a feasibility study to look into a concrete skate park for the town, and we'll talk about that later in the show. But first, some disappointing news on the COVID front. The circuit breaker restrictions in place in Zone 1 have been extended another week. Since October 8th, people in the Moncton region have been living with a single household bubble, which applies to private gatherings. Public gatherings in restaurants and regulated public spaces are still permitted among households. The province announced 39 new cases of COVID-19 on Thursday and fewer recoveries, inching the active case count in the province up slightly to 464. Zone 1 continues to have cases reported from an unknown origin. Out of 9 new cases in Zone 1 yesterday, 6 are under investigation, 2 are contacts of previously confirmed cases, and 1 is travel-related. Sackville Town Council will meet on Monday for its regular monthly meeting and will consider a number of motions, including the approval of the town's 2022 budget. But changes proposed by Councillor Sabine Dietz to make the budget more climate-friendly have not been incorporated. Dietz says she is considering her response and will bring it up directly with Council on Monday. Council is also considering a new equipment purchase for the fire department to replace damaged equipment, an additional $5,000 funding request from the Rural Health Action Group to kickstart their work on recruiting healthcare workers. There's also a new flyer distribution bylaw up for consideration, which would make it a bylaw infraction to deliver flyers to a home with a no flyers sign. Council will also consider spending about $12,000 on a feasibility study for a new concrete skate park and closing 2 streets temporarily in support of Moonlight Madness events. We'll talk with Recreation Director Matt Pride later in the show to hear more about those motions. Finally, Council will look at housekeeping changes to their own remuneration bylaw and hear final readings of an annual bylaw renewal to set the rate for the Business Improvement Area Levy, which raises about $25,000 for Main Street redevelopment from local area businesses. QP President Stephen Drost and Premier Blaine Higgs met Thursday afternoon and into the evening, discussing possible compromises that could end the week-old strike by QP workers. On Thursday afternoon, I stopped by the picket line at York and Main in Sackville to check in with local representative Pat Lekas.
So, Pat, Stephen Drost is meeting with the Premier right now, possibly, on Thursday afternoon. What are you hoping to hear coming out of that?
Well, we're all hoping for good news. I mean, that's the general feeling on the line, is we're hoping the Premier has seen the light, but we're not backing down.
And you're sticking to, the wage demands and also this point over the pensions. Is that an important one to draw?
It's very important. The average age for our, let's just say, educational assistant group is about 45. We do have a younger set starting to come in, so pensions are a big issue. And, you know, it's important to all the members.
Important to keep them out of that shared risk style of pension.
Definitely.
The Premier has said that educational assistants like yourself are not part of a current pension plan. So is that the case?
Absolutely not. We are considered part-time employees because we only get a maximum of 30 hours a week. but we do have access to and we do participate in a pension plan. He refuses us to give us that one more hour a week in order for us to be full-time pension contributors. So it's a big deal for us, but we do have access to a pension plan, and not just educational assistance, but everybody in QP 2745.
And you're saying QP 2745 includes not just educational assistance, but other workers like admin assistants.
Yes, there's many classifications from admin assistants to finance to payroll, clerks. There's so many classifications. So it's not just EAs. We are the school support workers. So anything other than an administrator or a teacher pretty much falls under our union. So we have behavior interventionalists, SIWs. They're very well trained and educated. So that's one classification that not many people hear about. So it's not just EAs. There's many classifications. And like I said, our admin assistants are very underpaid and they do a vast amount of work in the school and they're highly skilled. So they deserve a raise.
So back to pensions then. When Blaine Higgs talks about expanding the reach of the pension plan to include more people, so you're saying he's not referring to educational assistance because you already have access. Do you know what that's about?
I have no idea, but it doesn't pertain to our union.
Right. Now, we have heard of some parents who are boycotting online school in support of you. Is that something that QP is asking parents to do, or what's your position on that?
That is absolutely the parents' choice on whether or not to participate in online learning. QP is not taking a stance one way or the other. We're respecting the parents' choice.
And now, so it's been a heck of a week here, a full week of striking. What is the energy level like with strikers? How are people feeling?
People are really energized, and it's because of the immense support from the public, from the businesses. It's just overwhelming. It really warms your heart to know you are appreciated that much by the public. It gives us the strength to go on in the rain, the strength to go on when it's cold, when it's windy, and we're united, so we're strong.
All right. Thanks very much, Pat.
No problem.
That was QP Zone Shop steward Pat Lakis speaking with me on Thursday afternoon. Lakis says she is expecting some special visitors on the picket line in Sackville today. Serge Landry, the regional representative for the Canadian Labour Congress, Daniel Legere, the president of the New Brunswick Federation of Labour, and Linda Silas, president of the Canadian Federation of Nurses Unions, are planning to walk the line with QP members at about 12:30 p.m. today in downtown Sackville. Bill Johnstone Park will feel deserted this Saturday as the market vendors that have filled the green space all summer set up their weekly shops at a new winter location. I called up market manager Michael Freeman to get an update on the market and its new location. Michael Freeman, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you have news to share. The market has found a new winter home.
Yeah, which is especially exciting because last year we, due to the pandemic, had a really hard time renting an indoor space. So this is going to be the first time in 2 years that we have a roof over our head for the winter. We're going to be at the new Sackville Commons at 18 Lorne Street. It's the old cookie cutter bakery building.
Right. Yeah. That recently got a paint job. So it's looking a little bit spruced up.
Mm-hmm.
So will all the vendors be inside at the new winter location? Will there be will we see the spillover onto the street or what will it look like?
As usual, we are an indoor-outdoor market. Some of our larger vendors, like Portage Pork Plus, Dixon's Farm Fresh Beef, Esser's European Style Bakery, and the coffee truck, Deus Ex Machina, will all be outside. We're going to have a couple of farmers as well that are outside. We do have space indoors for 18 vendors, so the majority of our vendors will be indoors where it's warm and they can just set up a table. So in total, we're going to see, we have capacity for 26 vendors. I'm hoping to, you know, maybe shuffle things around to fit in a couple more. But that's what it's going to look like this year.
All right. And in terms of COVID protocols, do people need to show their proof of vaccination to go inside?
We don't require proof of vaccination to go inside because we are a mask on facility, you know, just like going to a grocery store. Some larger farmers markets, you know, like Dieppe or the Fredericton market that have a food court, have been struggling to organize a way to get proof of vaccination from customers to come and unmask and sit down to eat food at the market. But for our purposes, the market is going to be a place to shop. Folks can eat and have coffee outside. But indoors, it's just a place to shop. So it makes things easier to manage. And, you know, the priority is to fit as many vendors in as possible.
Right. Now, is there any updates on vendors? I've seen on the Facebook page a few new announcements here and there. Do you want to give us a quick rundown on what's new in terms of vendors at the market?
At this point, I should say, you know, as the market's getting a little smaller, we're sort of contracting to, you know, our steady crew that are with us throughout the year. So we're not adding a lot of folks right now, frankly. But, you know, we have a good, you know, steady 25, 26 that have been with us through the year. Some of the newer ones, Debbie Bryan's business, Lighthouse Baking. She sells hundreds of cookies every week at market. She's one of the newer ones. We have a vendor, Gail McCauley, who makes amazing felted floral arrangements, who started with us this year. And, you know, for a lot of our artisan vendors leading up to the holidays, you know, the next 2 months are the most important time of the year. So this is going to be her first crack at the busy season. You know, she has like lovely, you know, wool mittens that she stitches from old sweaters, and she's going to have a good season. We're going to have Ketchup With That Kitchen, the bakery in Midgick, with us for the winter for the first time in a couple of years. That they've, of course, been with us throughout the warm season, but it's going to be great to include them as well. I'm trying to think of other updates or things that are changing. Darren Wheaton, 3B's Honey, is back at market. He's had product available through another vendor, but he's going to be booking a table through into next year, which is wonderful. So we'll get to hang out with him on Saturdays. And then, you know, all of the usual producers and artisans and hot food vendors and value added, you know, like pickle producers and that kind of thing that we've had all throughout. So it's a good composition.
Great. Yeah. If the pressure's on. It's a bit like like receiving an award. You know, at the Academy Awards or something, where like the list goes on, you have to thank everyone. You have to mention everyone. Don't feel the pressure, Michael.
Sure. Well, and I, you know, to add, I would say like the pressure is on. This is the first time in 2 years that we've had a wait list, which is something that we rarely do because there are so many people that were at capacity. There are so many, you know, established and new businesses that want to be at the market. And so it, you know, it highlights for me, you know, this is a good option for this winter, but I would love to have a 35 vendor market, you know, with, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 more square feet that we could use, because we could definitely fill it.
Right. Wow. So there's a waiting list of vendors and they require indoor spots. Is that the idea? Because I mean, could you expand outdoors as much as you'd like, or?
We're reaching out to adjacent property owners to look at expanding the market into, you know, additional parking space. So that might open up. At this point, there's actually a wait list for indoor and outdoor spots.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
But, you know, that said, like there, I do encourage people to, you know, still get in touch with us because we, you know, prioritize people based on how early they get in touch and how long they've been involved with the market. And we do have vendors that will be away doing craft shows and that kind of thing. So I can get people from the wait list into spots.
Okay. Good to know. Now, Sackville Town Council recently had a look at a rough estimate on a multi-purpose building, and that's a building that has been talked about in terms of providing more indoor recreation space for the town, but also a permanent home for the Sackville Farmers Market. The price tag was high. It was $3.4 million, and that's just the sort of rough guesstimate that they make in these things. and it sounded like it might be several years off. Do you think the market can survive without a permanent home for that long?
We've survived without a permanent home for 36 plus years now. And I think that being a pop-up market is actually one of our strengths. It keeps the overhead fairly low. You know, our facilities costs for 6 months of the year when we're in the park are basically nil. So yes, we absolutely can survive. It doesn't come as a surprise to me that it's still 2 or 3 years out. You know, at this point, the fastest things could happen at if we had like the, you know, engineered designs and everything was ready to go would be for like the 2023 budget, I guess, mm-hmm. at this point. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we knew that when we started advocating for this kind of facility. So, you know, what initially we thought was going to be a 3-year project is, you know, quite clearly, you know, more like a 10-year project when you look at, you know, organizing all of the stakeholders, bringing it to the town doing all of its design work, and then, you know, getting council to authorize it and, you know, seeking the funding. There are so many steps. But at this point, you know, the impression I got is that council is willing to greenlight staff moving further in the direction of having, you know, an engineered plan and beginning to seek sources of funding. So that's encouraging to me.
Yeah, you felt the discussion around the table was positive on Monday.
That's the impression I have. Yeah. But, you know, try to remain optimistic here.
All right. Okay, Michael, well, thanks for taking the time to speak with us today. And I guess we'll see you on Saturday, indoors and outdoors, and on Lawrence Street.
Absolutely. Yeah, looking forward to seeing lots of our longtime supporters down there.
That was Sackville Farmers Market Manager Michael Freeman. When council meets on Monday, Recreation Director Matt Pride is hoping to get the go-ahead on two projects he has recently taken on. First, Moonlight Madness is coming up on November 19th and December 3rd, and this year the annual event is being organized by Pride and his department. And second, Pride is hoping for council approval to hire New Line Skate Parks to study the options for a new concrete skate park for Sackville. I called up Matt Pride earlier this week to find out more. Matt Pride, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So the town is taking over Moonlight Madness this year, and it sounds like it's considerably ramped up from last year. Can you tell me what's planned so far?
Yeah, sure. We took on a bit more of a lead, helping out the Sackville BIA, and we have the staff capacity to be able to put it on and get out to the businesses and see what we could make happen. So we have a lot of stuff going on. Almost every business in town, from the outskirts of Cattail Ridge right through to the outskirts of downtown on the other side with the liquidation store, are all participating. And we've got 25 vendors and fundraisers that are going to be setting up tables throughout the downtown. There's buskers. The tree lighting's taking place the first night. So Santa will be around. We'll be serving hot chocolate out on the street with our counselors. So we've got lots going on that night.
Okay. I gather there's going to be wagon rides?
Oh, yeah. We can't forget the wagon rides. They're always popular. So we have two full wagons coming to help keep the lines relatively small and help with, you know, social distancing as much as we can on the wagons themselves. So they're definitely always popular and the families love them.
All right. Now, last year it was Moonlight Madness was a bit more scaled down. That was my only Moonlight Madness that I've experienced so far. So in the history of Moonlight Madness, has it waned a little in recent years? And so this is representing a sort of new energy into it?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where the makeup of the downtown has changed over the years, and maybe there's less retail opportunities. I don't know. I haven't lived here for as long as Moonlight Madness has been around, but I have noticed. I always attend Moonlight Madness both nights every year, and I have noticed the number of people in town decreasing a little bit. And so where we have the staff time to be able to really do what we can to get the word out about what's happening in town, we thought we'd take it over this year and really push the message out to Sackville residents and hopefully generate a little more excitement in the downtown this year.
And there's a little extra budget, I guess, left over from the canceled fall fair. That's going to mean we're going to see some fireworks this year. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the plan. Pending council's approval of the street closure, December 3rd, we'll be putting on our fall fair fireworks display, and that'll take place at 6 p.m. right behind Town Hall here, like it normally does during fall fair. So that's pretty exciting that we are able to get that done. You know, COVID restrictions pending, of course, because I know a lot of people look forward to that during fall fair, and it was disappointing that it had to be canceled.
Does this event, I mean, you've had some disappointments, as you say, with the fall fair. You've had disappointments in the past couple years with events. Does this feel fairly COVID-proof?
I think most of it is, and, you know, as long as we get out of this circuit breaker, I think we can do just about everything that we have on the list here. So, you know, if there's an outbreak, there might be pieces that we need to scale back on. But in terms of people getting out and shopping locally and checking out the vendors who will be outside throughout the downtown, that's pretty COVID-proof, I'd say.
Okay. And what are the dates again, Matt?
November 19th and Friday, December 3rd.
Okay. And you mentioned that Town Council will be deciding on Monday about some street closures related to that. So there will be street closures for the event going on?
Yeah, no major streets, but just the Willow Lane up beside the Royal Bank, a little alleyway behind the bank would be closed to help vendors have a spot to park and unload their goods and keep traffic from pulling in and out of there on a what tends to be a busy pedestrian night. And then the opening of Ford Lane beside the post office would also be closed to accommodate the wagon rides. And for the fireworks, I guess we'll be closing Dufferin Street at 3:30 till about 6 or 7 once the fireworks display is over.
Okay. All right. Now, I want to ask you about one more thing that's coming up, possibly. Again, another decision to be made at Monday's town council meeting. But you have a proposal in to hire New Line Skate Parks to do a feasibility study for the improvements to Sackville Skate Park. So what will that study consist of?
Well, there's several pieces to it, I guess. It would consist of some public consultation. So we would reach out to the skate park or skateboarding community, I guess, here in Sackville. And we already have some connections and some people that we've been talking to, both older and younger, who are excited at the prospect of potentially bringing a concrete park to town. So once New Line talks to them, and they'll also, New Line will also work with us to determine the most appropriate site and what type of site work might need to take place, and what types of features the community would like to see in the skate park. And they'll bring all that information back to council and give them a general idea of what a skate park of that, you know, magnitude or would cost the taxpayer. So it's hard to say right now how much a skate park would cost, but I know the one in Amherst was about $450,000 10 plus years ago. So, you know, that what we'd be looking at here is something kind of a similar size to that.
So that's sort of the general, I guess, size that you're considering. Yeah, the Amherst one, which is a popular one, I gather. That's what I hear from the skaters in my life, I guess.
Yeah, it's definitely well used. Anytime I'm over there, there's people on that facility. And one thing that we did talked to the lady, Jen Bourne, who facilitated the construction of that site. And I've talked to a couple of people in Moncton who were involved with building parks there. And they've all said the same thing, that it is one of those situations where if you build it, they will come. Skateboarders like to travel the Maritimes and check out different parks. And, you know, they'll spend money while they're in town to buy a coffee or whatever. So there could be some economic benefit from having a facility like this in Sackville. So, you know, whether council ends up agreeing to move forward with the construction over the next few years or not, we'll see. But the feasibility study will give them a very good idea of what exactly it is that the people of Sackville here want for a skate park.
And I guess when it comes to skateboarding, there's not you're not really looking at, you won't have people needing help with registration fees and that sort of thing, because it's sort of, you need a skateboard, and then if, as long as there's a skate park, it's pretty much a free recreation activity. Once the park is built, that is.
Yeah, exactly. And council has already shown that they're committed to providing a healthy and physically active community here through our recreation master plan and through their endorsement of the national framework of sport and recreation. And so something like a skate park is a very inexpensive, for the user, I guess, a very inexpensive activity that they can take on and to keep themselves physically active and healthy.
Do you think it would be something that the town itself would have to fully bankroll, or do you think there might be provincial or federal funding or even other types of funding available to help with it?
No, there's definitely infrastructure funding out there that we could explore to help pay for a park like this. So I wouldn't expect the full amount to come from the municipal taxpayer.
All right. And what's the timeline for the study? If it gets
the study,
approved. Yeah.
Well, I've already got New Line on standby to be able to move ahead with it as soon as council approves on Monday night, and so we'll be able to hopefully have our community consultation here in the next couple weeks, and then move ahead and have the study done before Christmas.
Wow. Okay, that's happening.
That's the hope.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Meanwhile, you'll be busy doing Moonlight Madness, so you'll have to squeeze it in.
Yeah, I'll figure it out. I'm used to multitasking.
All right. Okay, well, thanks so much, Matt. I appreciate you taking the time to tell us about this stuff today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That was Sackville Recreation Director Matt Pride. On a final note today, men's AUS football has a big day in Sackville tomorrow. The men's football Mounties final game of the regular season is happening Saturday starting at 3 p.m. on Alumni Field. The Mounties take on the Bishop's Gators. That's it for CHMA's Tantramar Report for this Friday, November 5th. As always, we hope you will get in touch with your comments or questions at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening. Thank you.